Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So as Jen and I have been traveling across the country, we've gone to a lot of places this summer where we've been hiking, like Denver and Seattle, and we love barefoot shoes, but we also need something that's going to protect our feet. So Vivo Barefoot's recent Tracker Forest that they put out is this incredible hiking boot. It has such a grippy bottom. It's going to protect your feet from the rocks on those hikes, but still give you that barefoot profile you're looking for. Flexible, lots of room for the toes, still being able to feel what your feet are doing underneath you. If you're looking for a pair of shoes to go hiking this summer, check out Vivo Barefoot.
There's been a code change. Use code OPTIMAL now at checkout to get that 15% off. The code is OPTIMAL.
Give your feet the room to breathe to get out this summer and do some more hiking. Check the link in the show notes. Use code OPTIMAL15. All right, diving into another PT Pro. This is one we get all the time where people are talking about their flat feet. Oh, it's because I have these flat feet, or I need to have these arch supports in, or whatever it may be. I think it's something that comes up a lot for different people. I think it's something that's prevalent in a lot of different populations. But what does it mean? How do we develop this thing called flat feet? Are there different categories of flat feet? Let's dive into it.
Yeah, I mean, I get to hear it a lot too, especially because we talk about Vivo Barefoot so much and those shoes that we love to wear. And I get so many comments of, but I have no arch. I need the arch support. I need orthotic. So do you really? I think it's a really good question to be asking, like, just because you're told you need something, I think it's important to continue to say, but why, right? And what is it really doing for me? And so I hope that we can help dissect that a little bit deeper in this podcast.
Like you said, we get a lot when we talk about these barefoot shoes. And reality, what we're going to be talking about a lot during this episode is, how have we been training our feet? And what are the messages we've been telling our feet throughout our entire life, based on what type of footwear we've been wearing, what type of athletic endeavors or
movement
exercises,
movement
practices we've been doing.
Or not doing.
Totally. How have we been teaching our feet how to operate throughout life, and where are we at now? And this is where sometimes when we say, oh, try these barefoot shoes out, and right now your foot's in a place where you've been using orthotics for a long time, you've been wearing more traditional footwear or shoes for a long time, it is really difficult. It is really difficult just to suddenly make that jump, but we might talk a little bit more about how to do that
later on
as we dive in.
Yes.
After we dissect flat feet a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, flat feet, commonly medically known as pes planus.
Pes planus? I say planus.
Planus.
I feel like a lot of people say different things.
They do. But really, it's just talking about that medial part. So meaning the inside arch, that long longitudinal medial arch is just, you know, going from the heel to the ball of the foot. And that is completely flattened down to the ground. Now we can see this when we're standing, and we can also see this even if we're not standing, so non-weight bearing. And then that's kind of classical of, you know, kind of categorizing it into these two different types.
Yeah, I want to do some of my favorite game, which is medical terminology dissection, where we make fun of how dumb medical terms are, where pes planus or pes planus, pes means foot, planus, flat. Foot flat. So there we go. The fancy words that literally just mean flat foot. And the medial longitudinal arch, medial, inside, longitudinal, long arch, the long, middle, or inside arch. So again, these things we just make these fancy words for and
sound smarter.
So we sound so smart. But the middle of the foot is going flat. And you kind of brought up, it can happen in weight-bearing or non-weight-bearing positions. So if we're just sitting and our feet are resting on the ground and we have an arch, but then we stand up, and then it looks like that medial longitudinal arch flattens down to the ground. That's what's called a flexible flat foot.
Yep.
Where you have an arch present when you're not in a weight-bearing position, but then you stand up and the arch flattens out to the ground. Or what we know as pronation, where the foot kind of flattens into that ground. So that's called a flexible flat foot versus a rigid flat foot, which is if you're just sitting on a chair in a non-weight-bearing position and your foot is resting on the ground, that middle of the foot is already flattened to the ground without putting weight through it.
Yeah. And so we know, like, flexible is also known as pediatric flat foot.
Yes, because it's common, much more common in kids that are younger.
Right. And it's more likely to be asymptomatic. So even if you're standing up and you notice that you have a flat arch, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have pain, which we've talked about this a lot, right? Other podcasts, we indicate structure or posture, or we just cannot indicate that you're going to have injury and you're going to have pain. Where on the flip side, we look at rigid, and that is more so known as your adult acquired flat foot, which I really like that word because that means that we're acquiring this rigid foot, right? Rather than just being born with it. We're just kind of developing it over time.
Yeah. And that's where you'll see the flexible flat foot in the pediatric population, which is why the flexible flat foot we know more as this pediatric flat foot, because when we're younger, we have this massive fat pad on the bottom of our foot. We're just starting to learn how to support and stand and weight bear through that foot. So actually, when a lot of kids will have this a lot more prevalent when we're younger, it'll disappear as our foot starts to develop more normally. If you have a rigid, quote, rigid flat foot when you're younger, then it probably had to do a lot more with something that's congenital from when you were born.
You were born with it.
Or something
that's
like
your
that.
Structure.
Right.
Yeah.
But like Jen said, a lot more of these are asymptomatic.
Yeah.
The flexible ones.
The flexible one, where the rigid one kind of presents as like posterior tib tendonitis or dysfunction. Yeah. And we've talked about that a lot in the shin splints episode.
We did.
And I don't remember exactly what number of episode that was. So go back and find it through our podcasts, because we've definitely addressed this. Because if you're thinking shin splints, that kind of pain, it's not just, you know, on the top of your shin. It actually relates to what's happening at the foot as well. So go listen to that podcast. We go into it a lot more.
But kind of like you were talking about this acquired, right? This acquired term that they use. I really like that, because when we talk about flexible flat foot, again, we try to talk about, hey, if you have flat foot, that doesn't mean you're going to have pain. That doesn't mean you're going to have dysfunction. However, it's a good thing to be aware of, right? So if we have this functional flat foot, what are we allowing our foot to do every time we take a step? And if this is something that we're not aware of, that we're just allowing our foot to kind of rest into the end range of those structures, maybe specifically this posterior tibial tendonitis or tendon, or this posterior tibialis, which is the muscle. It's one of the muscles that really helps support that arch.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're always functionally letting our arches lie flat, our feet lie flat on the ground, then we're just letting that posterior tibial tendon, this is like a tongue twister, rest in its most lengthened position. And that's how over time we might start to develop this dysfunction, where that muscle's a little less active. It doesn't know how to coordinate as well while we're walking to support through that foot. So then we develop more of that rigid state and just kind of stay in that flattened state.
Right. I mean, and that just goes back to compensatory patterning, right? Uh-huh. Which we talk about a lot as therapists. This is where we talk about those compensatory patterns, right? Where you're talking about not utilizing the muscles that we have that work the foot. I mean, that's basically what it is. If we want to support the arch, we got to use the muscles. And if we're not using the muscles, we start to build compensations within our body. And that's where we can start to see things like shin splints. We can even start to see how flat foot can then start to possibly correlate to maybe having knee pain, maybe having other pain up the way of our body, right? Up the chain. However, we can't say you have flat foot, you're going to have knee pain. You have flat foot, you're going to have back pain. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. It just means that we could start building into compensatory patterns based on not using the structures of our feet, not using the structures of our muscles, and therefore weakening other structures along the way. And really what we're looking at too, when we're talking about this rigid type pattern, is we have to understand too, I think it's important to note, like you said in the beginning, we're flexible, that non-weight bearing is, you can see the arch, right? So when you're not standing, you can see the arch, but when you stand, you can't see the arch. It's so prevalent in kids 2 to 6 years old. It was like 21 to 57%.
Yeah, depending on, you know, what study they may have looked at, it's a lot more prevalent. And this kind of makes sense because, again, kids are a lot more malleable. They can bounce back. Their tissues are a lot more stretchy and bendy. Even their bones are more malleable. Totally. And our body is learning. So we should be able to access a lot more range through this arch. You know, I'm guessing if they wanted to, they could probably curl their foot into an arch a lot more than maybe an older adult who's already learned all their patterns.
And flatten.
Yeah. And flatten, you know, per their high numbers of having that flexible flat foot.
Yeah.
Right. But as we get into our primary ages, that significantly reduces to like 14, 13 to like 27 or 13 to 28%. And then even into adulthood, it gets even lower.
Yeah. And that's where it goes up to like 14% at max is what we're seeing in the studies.
Yeah, 5 to 14% or so. And again, so to me, that just kind of shows that, hey, as we age, our foot kind of learns what its tendency is. So rather than when we're really young, our body allowing ourselves to go, okay, we can go really flat, we can go really high into this arch where we have this functional flat foot that's probably asymptomatic at this point. That's the time that our body's learning, okay, this is how I support through this. Or maybe this is how I'm not supporting through this as much. And then developing what might later in life turn into that rigid flat foot. So it's all about developing what patterns we're going to have. And then you see our, quote, true foot form emerge as we come into adulthood.
Right. And this also, you know, as many diagnoses or dysfunctions we see within the body, there's also risk factors, you know, that contribute to possibly having flexible or rigid or turning into more rigid of a foot. And that's a lot with, you know, when we're talking about diabetes, or even not having that sense and that awareness down to our foot. So we develop, you know, neuropathic issues.
Yeah. And that's different. Like you're talking about risks of developing flat foot. Like if you have any sort of ligament laxity, like
some
people who have EDS or Marfan syndrome might have more of a likelihood.
Hypermobile people.
Yeah, totally. And different things like osteoporosis, osteoarthritis can predispose us to developing different flat-footed conditions. So lots of things that can play into
pregnancy,
just overall weight.
Yeah, weight-bearing.
Yeah, because weight-bearing is something that's going to put a lot of pressure through that arch. So lots of different risk factors that may contribute to us developing more of a rigid flat foot later in life.
Right. But it doesn't mean that we're restricted to always being in that position or again, that structure or what it looks like to be a flat foot means that you're going to develop pain or injury. There's always ways, even though the structure might look a little bit different than someone else, it doesn't mean that you can't still start to retrain the way that the muscles work around that foot, around that arch. And I think that is always going to be like our main thing that we want to be talking about. But we also have different, you know, signs and symptoms in terms of really understanding, okay, when might I be predisposed to having more of a rigid or flexible flat foot? And we see things like having that lower leg kind of rotated. So when it's rotated out, our body's really good at kind of, if we think about it, like if one thing is rotated one way, then the thing below or above is going to be rotated the other way. So your body's really good at finding what we know as homeostasis, right? And inside the body, we find homeostasis, but outside as well. So if my body's going to rotate or lean one way, it's going to rebalance itself so you stay upright. So if my lower shin area rotates out, then my foot's going to rotate in. And what that automatically does, it flattens my foot, right? I get in more pronated type position. We can also look at some rotation at the heel area. Maybe it's rotating out, also flattening that foot. So again, that's just talking about the structures, and we have muscles around all of those areas to help support it no matter what it looks like.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a chicken and the egg situation. Like what came first, the chicken and the egg? Was I flattening out my feet or pronating my feet, which then caused me to rotate my tibia out? Or were my tibias and feet kind of rotated outward, which was then causing me to flatten and pronate my feet? And again, that's where that kinetic chain goes all the way up through the knee. Oh, well, then my knee might have been slightly valgus, and then my hip might have been slightly at this, you know, in this direction or whatever. And that's where we go up that kinetic chain, and we can find, oh, we might have knee or hip or back issues because how our foot operates affects everything up the chain.
Exactly. But again, not saying that the structure of how one thing is going to be, even though it's going to affect up the chain, is going to automatically lead to pain, right? And that's where we just have to focus, rather than focusing on the structure of what it looks like and where things are rotating or pronating, flattening. Yeah. What if we just focused on getting strong?
Totally. And how it feels through different movements and doing something slightly differently. I feel like we kind of brought up at the beginning, a lot of it is understanding where your body tends to sit. And so if you tend to be somebody who really flattens out into those feet or into those arches, like, what does it feel like to try and squat or walk a little differently? Being more aware of your arch, just being more aware of how you push through your foot even, can make a lot of difference.
Yeah. And we can have things that kind of support along the process, right? And that's where we talk about changing your shoes. So changing your shoes can make an effect on how we're responding within our movement patterns. So maybe flat foot, barefoot isn't necessarily going to be most supportive as you're strengthening. Maybe you do need a little bit more support as you're learning and as you're strengthening. Maybe you need less support. So like those huge shoes, what are they called? Platform.
Oh yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, those have a ton of support. Mostly seen in like ultra marathon runners, I feel like.
And Because
I mean, you're running 100 miles. I probably want a lot more support that I'm pushing through as well. But, you know, we can change our shoe. We can change different things within our shoes. So that's where we get things like orthotics, inserts, wedges that help respond differently within our foot. But if we're just looking at changing the structure, it's not going to make a huge difference on how we feel.
Yeah. Jen and I, when we come to like what treatments are available, but then how we think that we should approach it, it might be a little bit different. You know, when we look at flat feet, and we've kind of talked about the progression of having this functional flexible or pediatric flat foot kind of progressing to a symptomatic rigid, you know, flat foot, where if we're asymptomatic and we have more of a flexible type flat foot, like, you're doing okay. Keep moving, keep trying things out. It's not until it moves to, hey, maybe I have a symptomatic flexible flat foot, then what should I start doing differently? Okay, am I overusing my foot? Have I just made a footwear change from something that has maybe a little arch support to something that doesn't? That can make a big difference. So being aware of all these different factors that are at play is huge. And if we make a footwear change, what else are we doing exercise or movement wise to try and support those structures as they go through that change? So yeah, footwear change, orthotics, everything, they're all great. But our message is they always have to come along with some sort of exercise, training, body awareness, movement patterning, that's going to help me make that transition into different footwear potentially, if that's something that you're doing.
Exactly. Like, I'm not against orthotics. I'm against using it only as the primary treatment plan without anything else in place and saying, oh, no arch, here's an arch, right? Like, what is that doing? That's creating a crutch for the body, but not teaching it how to use it on its own. Yeah. And again, it's not about rebuilding this look of an arch. It's about rebuilding the function of our feet so that it can use it, whether it has the arch or not.
Yeah, like the posterior tibialis. If we just put the arch in there and don't change anything else, we're just telling that posterior tibialis, okay, that's fine. You haven't been working. We're just going to put this here so you can continue not working. Rather than saying, okay, we're going to put this arch here for a while. We're also going to have you do 20 short foot exercises, which is a great way to engage your posterior
tibialis. You want to talk about what that is a little bit?
Let's try. So a short foot exercise, and if you're watching on YouTube, we might be able to
see your feet.
I know that. Thank you. But if you're watching on YouTube, we might be able to put up an example for you. But a short foot exercise is basically if you're keeping the ball of your foot or up kind of by the pads of your toes on the ground and the heel on the ground, can you create an arch and kind of shorten your big toe back towards your heel? So create an arch back towards the heel and just hold that. And it's easiest if you're going to try to start doing it in like sitting. If you're standing up, then in weight bearing, you're throwing a whole lot of extra things in the mix.
Yeah. And really, you want to try not to bend the toes. So it's not just about like doing those towel exercises.
Curl, yeah.
It's really just trying to almost draw that ball of the foot toward the heel. And a lot of times the foot might rotate out a little bit, and that's fine, right? It's going to change the positioning of those bones. However, you want to feel a little contraction underneath the foot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, when this is their first time ever trying it, there's no awareness going on there, right? Like it is really hard to feel what's happening underneath the bottom of the foot if you're not used to it. So you've got to commit to trying this exercise over and over and over again over an extended period of time. You will start to feel
it. It's kind of like the first time you try to just do toe spreads. You know, it doesn't feel like anything's going on down there. But the more that you do it, the more that you try and focus on it, pretty soon you'll be doing short foot exercises in standing or short foot exercises on one foot. Because again, then that's how we start to put ourselves in a weight bearing position, in a weight bearing position on one foot while we're still actively supporting through that arch. And then to kind of return back to, okay, what we're doing in treatment, if we've started having symptoms, maybe we have some arch support or an orthotic in the shoe. But if we're doing these short foot exercises, we will much more quickly notice ourselves being able to handle more, whether it's doing it barefoot or doing it without our orthotics before we get that pain and before we get those symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And I love, like you brought up toe spread exercises. That's another exercise. We have, we think about it, and we've talked about this before. We have those little intrinsic foot muscles, right? Mm-hmm. That go along the base and the bottom of that foot, and they connect all the way up between the toes. And so even just spreading the toes is going to work what's happening at the bottom of my arch. So if you want to rebuild your foot strength, you've got to be using your toes. You've got to be using your ankles. And honestly, you have to be using the entire body. It's like, it's like telling a person who might have some prolapse or some symptoms in the pelvic floor, just do Kegels. Well, how does that relate to movement? Right? Like just doing foot short arc is great. Just doing toe spreads are great because it's bringing awareness to those muscles and we're helping to get strong. But at the same time, we have to be using that in exercise. We have to be, well, how can I hold my short arc? Like you said, I love like, you know, progressing to single leg, that's progressive overload of those muscles. How do we start to progress it and use it during exercise? It has to become functional. And that's how we really start to progress. And one of the studies that I had found is that, you know, increasing your foot strength really helped to lower your, for recreational runners, it helped to reduce the risk of injury by 2.42-fold.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that I hate about studies like that is it says, okay, increasing your foot strength. And I'm sure it like defines out more what that means or what it means to increase your foot strength or have better foot strength. But the same way in studies as when they say, oh, a potential intervention is physical therapy. Like there's so many things that a physical therapist or a movement professional for that matter can help you do when it comes to flat foot or, you know, having pain in your arches due to or related to flat feet. I mean, there's so much you can do with a PT. They can start to assess different movement patterns where they think you may be having contributions into putting more pressure through your arch, all sorts of different things. So there's so much that a PT can do to start maybe giving you different tools on how to better support.
Yeah, from your hip to your range of motion to everything.
Yeah. We talk again about Vivos a lot.
Yeah.
And I think there's a few different things that really can show the power of just being barefoot. When they did a study in populations of kids growing up that were either going to school like barefoot, wearing sandals, slippers, or closed-toed shoes, and the development of flat foot or this flexible flat foot in these different populations. And those that were wearing closed-toed shoes were up to like 8%, almost up to 9% having this flat foot versus those who were barefoot only had about 2% range of people who developed this flat foot. So it just kind of shows like the environment that we allow our feet to spend time in really trains them and trains what they will do as we age. So same way with Vivos. I mean, there's a study that they did where people just wore Vivos for 6 months and it increased their foot strength by 60%.
It's huge.
Which is pretty amazing. So small changes that are done consistently can make drastic changes in the way that our feet feel. And that's kind of one of the messages that we always want to push.
Exactly. And you can have a different foot structure for a lot of different people. And Vivos are still effective in increasing that foot strength. Like just looking at Dom and I have a lower foot arch. I definitely don't have like a super defined one where you have a very high arch.
Yeah.
And we both have been wearing Vivo barefoot for over...
Yeah, a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And it's something that it allows your foot to have the space to work on what it's not good at, essentially, where your foot is, you know, has a much more flat profile versus mine having a much more arch profile. Yours might be working on how can I use those muscles to actively support a little better, you know, versus pronating into the ground, where my foot might be working on how can I let my foot pronate a little more into the ground and have some more cushion in that arch rather than being so rigid.
Mm-hmm.
And the barefoot shoe allows both of our feet to do that.
Exactly. It allows it to build it on its own without having to rely on something else. And now that's going to be dependent person to person. And you know, you got to find your own balance of how you ease into more of a barefoot shoe, especially if you've had a lot of orthotics, you've had inserts, you've had all these things. How can I build my foot while I still have those things and then slowly start to ease out of them and then slowly start to ease back into now more of a barefoot shoe? I mean, it's definitely a process and you have to allow your body time to adjust.
So of course, if you haven't already, after all the different times we talk about Vivo, we have our code OPTIMAL15 to get 15% off. We'll try to throw the link in the show notes so you can just go grab that. But yeah, get 15% off, try them. You have 100 days to try out the shoes. Absolutely risk-free. If you hate them after the 100 days, send them on back. But yeah, give them a try. I have found so many different changes in my feet after I made this barefoot change over the past 2 years. And I didn't initially think that it would make that big of a difference, but man, the difference it's made is humongous.
Yeah.
Yet another incredible PT Pro. You know how we love our feet. Remember that foot, Optimal 15, to get yourself 15% off. And if you've been loving these PT Pearls, subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. That helps us so much be seen by more people. Next week, we have disc herniation coming up, a PT Pearl on disc herniations. We're going to dive in and dissect that. So stay tuned.